Hello, Ken. It's great to be with you for another Ally Insight Week. I saw on Twitter and from Lainey's feed this week some information about a French overlay company that actually sued an accessibility advocate and won in their court system. What do you know about that?
I don't know that much, Thomas, but I could give a brief summary about what I do know. There's a company called Facilité in France, and they make an overlay that apparently makes it easier to change the appearance, font size, color contrast, and things like that on your screen. And they were on Twitter, and they made a few tweets, and this company, Coena, which is a small woman-owned web design firm that also focuses on accessibility, responded with two tweets. And as far as I know, what got them in trouble were just these two tweets. And one tweet said, "Let's stop the misleading messages. No, Facilité does not make its site more accessible to people with disabilities, but only modifies the appearance of pages. And the solution does not meet the needs of internet users." And then in another tweet, they said that Facilité doesn't make forms or images accessible, and that there are a number of other features that it doesn't improve the accessibility of, and that are commonly encountered by people with disabilities, and it doesn't ensure compliance with the RGAA, which is the digital accessibility law in France, which incorporates WCAG. And they said it is not a miracle solution of digital accessibility. So just those two tweets are basically what got them in trouble.
And that's horrible because, as I've listened to what they said, that's what I believe. There is no miracle solution for accessibility. So the fact I echo their concern, the fact that people try to make it seem like that is misleading. And if a judge or someone actually understood the ecosystem, they might have a different perspective when they judged it.
I think that's right. As a result of those two tweets, the company sued them, and they ended up having to pay over 26,000 euros, which came out to about $28,000. And they were also ordered to remove the two offending tweets. Since then, Coena has started a fundraising campaign to pay the fine and also to appeal the judgment because they think that it's wrong. And I have to say that on the basis of just those two tweets, I'm a bit surprised the judge decided against Coena because it doesn't seem like they were saying that they're committing any kind of fraud or deceiving their customers. It just sounds like it's not a complete solution and that it doesn't make websites completely accessible.
I think for me, it's just, well, I only know the American legal system and I barely know that. I think it's kind of confusing to read that judgment or read that understanding. And it's like, did you take any time to try to really understand the issue? Because as we talk about on this podcast here, there's a lot of details that go into how this can all work. And I think if you make too quick of a decision, you're just not really understanding the problem.
I think that's right. The other thing that strikes me is that in the United States, where people perceive us as being the most litigious culture in the world, and had this case been brought in the United States, I'm not sure they would have won. Granted, I'm not a torts lawyer, so I don't know exactly the law of defamation in this country. Certainly no expert at it. But it seems as though just looking at this one ruling that it's a lot easier to get sued in France than it is to get sued in the United States for something like this. And that's not something I would have expected. And I think that it would be interesting when we compare it to other cases in the United States that involve the same sort of issues.
Ken, I was thinking about AudioEye versus Roselli and thinking that might have a connection to this case. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's really interesting when you compare the facts and those two cases against each other. On the one hand, you've got the Coena case in France, where it's basically the entire lawsuit comes down to just those two tweets that I summarized at the beginning of this podcast. In the AudioEye case, by contrast, the complaint goes much further and describes how Adrian Roselli was part of the community of people that was voicing concerns about overlays in general. It wasn't all geared towards AudioEye. In fact, very little of it was. It was mostly geared towards other overlay companies, but AudioEye was caught up in the same swell of opinion. And so it was based on that as well as some specific tweets, as far as I can recall. But it was about behavior that was much more drawn out over a much longer time period than simply two tweets. And in France, apparently, if you just make two in tweets that somebody disagrees with, then you can get sued for a lot of money very quickly.
Yeah, actually have to pay it out. That's incredible to me. I can't imagine paying $1 for what I wrote on Twitter. So 28,000, 23,000, no.
Changing subjects, Thomas, what do you think about Facility's reputation within the accessibility community?
Well, I think it's obviously still early to come to make an impression of a company. I think that I do see there are more and more companies operating in the accessible technology space. I think from what I'm reading about Facility, it sounds like an overlay company, which we've had historically a few other bad actors acting in this space where people make claims saying that they will make your whole website accessible for everyone just by installing one piece of code. And anyone that works in this space for real knows that that's not true. So that's my understanding, is that they unfortunately are one of the companies that was making that type of claim. So Ken, you've worked a lot on these issues at IAAP. Why do you think people are so hot-headed and opinionated on this issue specifically?
That's a really great question, Thomas. It comes down to the fact that there are two different ideas about accessibility, as far as I can tell. For the overlay companies, they really do believe, and I agree with them, that they are improving accessibility. On the one hand, they look to a different group of users. When I was a keynote speaker for the Digital Accessibility Legal Summit, I think it was a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, the person who followed me was Yovel Wagner from Israel, where some of these overlay companies are based. And he said, when someone asked him that same question, like, what's the deal with overlays? He said that over there, they don't market their overlays as accessibility solutions or compliance solutions. They focus them on the older generation. And over in the United States, they focus in on accessibility compliance because we have so many accessibility lawsuits. And when he said that, all of a sudden, it makes sense that they really are improving the lives of the older generation that becomes disabled, that hasn't been using a screen reader their entire lives, that have no idea how to use a screen magnifier or tools like that. And if you can just click on a button that shows up on a web page and then select to have your font enlarged or to improve the color contrast, for that group of users, it's a great solution. The problem is that I think that in the United States and elsewhere where we're dealing with compliance, we're talking about an entirely different group of users. We're talking about people who are younger professionals who have spent their entire lives using very sophisticated assistive technology that may be blocked by overlays, or that when overlays just get in the way, and they have a legitimate point there too. So one of the quotes I think that we came across when we were looking at Facility's response was that their CEO said, well, I don't care about compliance. I really care about improving the lives for users. When he said that, I really think that he meant that. And I think that it's true that for a certain group of users, they are making the world a better place, but it's not making the world necessarily a better place for all users with disabilities.
I love that point. I think I 100% hold that space too, that there has got to be some features in that code that they've worked on that actually benefit people. And just to have this like blanket reaction to an overlay as being immediately bad, I don't have that. You don't have that. It's like, yeah, I want to see what the product does. Does it make it easier? And to your point, and to what they're explaining, their target market, it's like, that's always been a thing for accessibility. A lot of people don't know it's available or that it could be used to them. So having it more visible on a website and being able to see it and try out the features and then benefit from them makes sense to me. So a lot of it I agree with in that perspective.
Okay, now I'll ask you another question, Thomas. As technology evolves, do you think that there's a role for AI to play in the improvement of overlays?
Yes, obviously. I think AI is now, that's what we all should be studying, thinking about, learning about. I mean, it's going to affect all of the next generation of technology. So I think it definitely has a part. And I like to try to think a little bit farther ahead. I really did appreciate talking with Joe Dolson about AI. And I was thinking about alt text for images. And one of the things that has always been strange in my career was thinking about how to summarize an image from, for example, my singular perspective of like a piece of art. I have to summarize that in 150 characters. That's something with AI where I think different people have different preferences of what they would like to hear as a description of the image. And it makes more sense to me now in the future to be like, here's all the information about the image. And what does someone want to know about the image? They can query that themselves and have it customized to them. So that conversation with Joe was really interesting. That's like definitely something I've been thinking about for AI, where I'm like, it makes sense to me that that's a way that it could be better for accessibility. What about you, Ken?
Yeah, I think that's a great use case for AI and accessibility. As I think about the overlays in particular, because overlays didn't come to us with a perfect solution out of the gate, it's so easy to criticize them. But over time, I really think that all of us in the accessibility community are going to ultimately be relying upon AI, whether we like it or not. Your example of a customizable alt description to go with an image based upon the user's preference, I think goes to a level of accessibility that's so far beyond our current thinking, because we don't think about mutable alt text based upon user preference. Eventually, once AI becomes more mainstream, that those kinds of solutions are going to become the new norm. And what we're currently doing is really kind of antiquated. But if we don't allow the development of technologies like overlays and allow them to experiment with newer technologies like AI, we're never going to get there.
Ken, you won me over with mutable alt text as a term, but I totally agree. Like, it has to be serious, and to actually make progress, it has to be worked on sort of in these ways. So even though maybe we both have the frustrations of how the standards bodies work, I also do understand how important it is to get things defined and make it possible for people to implement successfully.
Hey, listeners, what do you think? Join the conversation at equalentry.com.